Well, good day, everybody. This is Rick with Spinal Network, and this is podcast number 14. And with me today, we have Mike Rosenkrantz from SoCal Adaptive Sports. And but first of all, I'd like to describe myself for those who may not be able to see the screen, or maybe they're listening to this podcast. So I am I'd like to just take this one and just go with, oh yes, a mid 40s guy with a bunch of hair, but I'm not. I mean, we're talking a male, late 60s, no hair, and I'm wearing glasses. I have a kind of a cream colored Spinal Network podcast series t-shirt on. My background is the Spinal Network podcast series logo, which is a white background, blue lettering with this kind of this orange squiggly. I don't know how else to describe it other than an orange squiggly in between the L of spinal and the N of network. So, and again, with me again, we have Mike Rosenkrantz, who heads a great group of folks, and his organization is SoCal Adaptive Sports. And Mike, if you could describe yourself.
Sure. Thanks, Rick, for having me on. I am a male, 60s, wearing a gray t-shirt that says abilities outweigh disabilities. I have glasses and I have some hair on my head, which is great. So that's me. I'm at my house recording this.
Okay. And I've got to say that Mike lives in Palm Springs, and we were just talking about this just before we started the recording, where it's about 115 degrees and the forecast for tomorrow is 120. So I will not complain about the heat tomorrow. So, and so Mike, let's, Mike, well, for just a little bit of background, Mike and I, connected, what, maybe 3 years ago now?
Yeah.
About 3 years ago. And we talked about, adaptive sports and things like that in Southern California. And we talked about putting on an adaptive sports and recreation event. And, it was a bit daunting for our two small organizations to try to do that at that time. So, we kept talking about it, but figured at some point we would. We put together this networking group called MCAP. And MCAP is Mobility Community Access Partners. And we just said, threw this out at a number of organizations, agencies, and businesses, saying we want to start this networking group, and this is what we want to do. And it's not going to cost anybody anything, and we're not going to take a bunch of your time. And everybody came back and said, hey, that sounds great. So we started at that point with 15 partners, and now I believe we have 23 partners.
Wow!
Somewhere around there. And so we took that idea that we had and threw it out at the partners and said, hey, who wants to get together and put on this adaptive sports and recreation thing? And once again, everybody came back and said, hey, that sounds great. Of course, not everybody has been engaged, but many have, and we just held our third adaptive sports recreation and resource fair on June 3rd on Mission Bay in San Diego, and it was just this great success, and it's been wonderful. So now we're planning. And September 30th, we are planning a pickleball/boccia tournament, which will be at Parque de la Cruz in San Diego. So, you can connect with either of us, and at some point we'll make sure that you have our contact information. We can throw that out. So anyway, that's the history with Mike and I. And then he threw this podcast at me that he had been on. I listened to it, and you know, just when you think you know somebody, you realize you really don't. And it was fascinating. And I said, Mike, you got to be on my podcast. And so we're going to start with that. So I'm going to say, Mike, if you could just share some of that history.
Yeah.
It was just incredible.
Sure. Sure. Thanks, Rick. I appreciate it. And looking forward to the Boccia Pickleball tournament. That's going to be really fun. The Boccia tournament is kind of a prelude to a regional Boccia tournament we're going to be doing at Santa Ana College in mid-January. So hopefully we'll pick up a few more Boccia players. So I've been working in this field, adaptive sports field, since about 2011. I had a great opportunity to be a voluntary service overseas volunteer in India from 2009 to 2012. And I was placed with the Indian government, the Ministry of Social Justice and Empowerment National Trust. And they work with the NGOs throughout the country that work with people with disabilities. So that was the first time, you know, that I really dove into, you know, this working with people with disabilities. And, you know, I was coaching stand-up basketball at the New Delhi YMCA on Saturday nights. And after a couple of years of being in India, I met some guys from a group called Wheelchair Athletes Worldwide, and they came to India and we did a project together. And that's how I learned about wheelchair basketball. And I thought, oh, this is really cool. And so, you know, continued with that in India, continued learning more. After I finished my time in India, I went to Nepal for 4 years, in 2012 to 2016. And I continued working with VSO, not with people with disabilities, but on land rights throughout the country, which is a really big issue. But I also, I volunteered working with people with disabilities. I ended up coaching a Nepal Army wheelchair basketball team on an army base, which I thought was just hilarious. And, you know, when I came back to the US 2016, I really wanted to learn more about adapted sports. And so I landed in Tucson, Arizona, which is where the University of Arizona is, and where my friend Pete Hughes was the coach for the women's wheelchair basketball team. He's now the in charge of all adaptive sport programs for the university. You know, and I said to Pete, hey, I really want to learn. Can I come and be your assistant? He said, yes. And so I did. And that got me really into it. And I co-founded an adaptive sports organization called Southern Arizona Adaptive Sports, but wasn't really able to stay long enough to see it, you know, through. And the organization has grown like crazy under Mia Hansen, who is the director, and she was the co-founder, one of the other co-founders. So after I was in Tucson, came back to California for a little bit of time. My mom was sick, so helped out there. And then I moved to North Carolina and worked for an organization called Bridge Sports, where I was able to coach youth in wheelchair basketball. And I was also able to lead a school program called Everybody Plays North Carolina. We went into schools and, you know, had all the children experience adaptive sports, disability etiquette piece. We're doing something similar now in the area where I live, and I'll talk more about that. After North Carolina, so I wanted to move back to California, aging parents and all that. Ended up in the desert, in Palm Desert area, and worked for a small organization. And when COVID hit, that was kind of it, a parting of ways. Which was for the best, actually. And then in May of 2020, co-founded and incorporated SoCal Adaptive Sports, and, you know, just haven't really looked back. And we're really, at times I'm just amazed. I mean, all the time I'm amazed, which is growing. Our partnerships are growing. The number of athletes that we're serving is growing. the number of activities that we're involved in is growing. And so it's really just been phenomenal just to be part of this. Obviously I've grown too, spiritually, in just doing this work. So it's all, very positive stuff, very positive.
It's interesting that you mentioned Pete Hughes, because I when I was involved with Colors Wheelchairs, and one day my good friend Ernie Espinoza, who so many people know from Colors, he said, "Oh, we've got this guy coming in who he's pretty cool, Pete Hughes, and we did this really bizarre looking chair, basketball chair for him, but he's coming in and he needs a little work done on it." So I said, "Okay," and I didn't know who Pete was, and so I happened to glance out at the parking lot, and I see this guy walking, and for anybody who doesn't know Pete has arthrogryposis. So his knees really don't bend, his hips really don't bend. So, here is Pete walking pretty much, like this robot, pushing this really funky looking basketball chair. And all of a sudden he kind of loses control of the chair. And as he goes to grab the chair, he just like a tree falling, he gently fell to the ground, catching himself, and he needed to catch his chair. So by the time he got up and all that, so he just rolls like a log rolling downhill, rolled down and grabbed his chair, got up, came back in, dusting himself off. And that was my introduction to Peter Hughes. And I happened to be working out there at one point, and Pete and his wife Susie, I said, "Well, I'm going to be down there and all that," and they said, "Okay, well, you're going to stay at the house." And I said, "No, I could just get a hook." "Oh no, you're staying at the house, and it's and welcomed me right into the house. He showed me his man cave with all his Pittsburgh Steelers stuff and the LA Ram fan over here. The kids were little at the time, and just a wonderful family and a great guy. And Colors, by the way, they were the only company willing to make a chair so custom, a basketball chair so custom that Pete could get in it. The seat had hardly any bucket to it. It was pretty much from the top of the backrest to the footrest was a bit of a slope, and that was it. But he would get in there, lock himself down, and he was good to go. So and he has done so many wonderful things with wheelchair basketball, and at the school. Just incredible. So
Back to Pete. Yeah, I saw him last weekend at Roll to Success at a wheelchair basketball camp, and I was able to work with Pete and others, and it was very, very, very good. I've always been I think socially conscious, of those that maybe don't have the same opportunities or have that many opportunities as others that I know, in life. I grew up middle class, had everything that I could have ever wanted, and was never homeless or anything like that. But I think in India, I mean, especially, I guess, you know, I really felt like this was a, this is very much a social justice issue. That mm-hmm. is, you know, it's about rights. Mm-hmm. It's about opportunities. It's about inclusion. You know, in India, thankfully, you know, there's a government body that was working on this, and some really good both civil servants and civil society people who were really, you know, pushing the agenda. But it's, you know, when you look at the world and the percentage of people with some type of, you know, disability, I mean, the number's large, you know, it's the largest minority population in the world. And, mm-hmm. you know, at some point, everyone has a disability just because of living so long and aging. So really, the key for me, although, I mean, I love sports and I'm just so, feel so thankful to be able to coach so many different sports. I mean, you know, everything from standing wheelchair basketball to pickleball and tennis and, you know, archery. We do some hiking. We're doing a skating program with our new venue, Akershire Arena, at the end of the month. You know, sailing, challenge sailors and California inclusive sailing.
Mm-hmm.
It's been pretty phenomenal. So, you know, but the key for me is, how do we create a lot more opportunities and choices so that if someone has a passion for, you know, art or sports or music, how do we ensure that, you know, people have those choices? And I think, I mean, you do it through creating a lot more inclusion. You know, it can't be about excluding people because you think, oh, you know, they can't do this. I mean, that's just the wrong attitude. So, you know, I feel very strongly about this work. And I, you know, I mean, I work a lot, but it's also, you know, it's just helped me to grow, I think, as a human being. And it's helped me to have a lot of patience. I'm doing a youth adaptive sports camp in Riverside. We did one last summer for June, and this summer, June and July. And, you know, the range of abilities is all over. And so it really, and we have some, you know, neurotypical able-bodied kids doing it too. So it's somewhat inclusive, but it's really, it's good for me to, you know, slow down and help someone to, you know, hit a ball. It may not be the way that, you know, an able-bodied neurotypical person does it, but, you know, if you can do that, so, you know, what can that lead to? What are the other things? And also it's about, you know, educating, right, people as well, so that, you know, they can look and see, yeah, there are differences, but nevertheless, you know, I, as a child, I can play with my friend with a disability. And so let me give you an example of that. So in the camp, I get the kids in sport wheelchairs, all the kids, although none of them use a wheelchair. But one little girl uses a walker. So when she's in the sport wheelchair, it's great. But so today, you know, the child with disability was throwing a ball with the child, the neurotypical able-bodied kid. And it was really great to see, because I saw kind of the transformation of the able-bodied, you know, child, where initially she was like, how do I do this? But today they were just, you know, I said, pick a partner. They picked each other and were playing. So that's right. I mean, that's the kind of thing we want to see throughout, you know, all of society. So I think bringing people together it's vital, right? It's vital. It's vital.
The impact, the positive impact on whether it be a sport or some recreational activity or music or art, but when there's an inclusive environment, the positive impact. I mean, you're talking, you know, this new self-esteem, this new sense of confidence.
Yeah.
All of these things that person now can take with them to the next part of their journey.
Yeah, I think that's really true. You know, one of the children that's attending camp, she's a little person. You know, I mean, she's young and all that. And I don't know that her mom has had her in camps before. And so, you know, at first you kind of look and go, huh, okay, yeah, this person is small. But then, you know, what comes out of this little girl is this spirit, you know, to do whatever. I mean, when you know, I say to the kids, give me a fist bump. I mean, she's like ah. And so I think you hit upon something, Rick, which is, you know, what percentage of the population plays sports, right? I mean, it's got to be a large percentage. And so, you know, you learn how to work with other people. You build self-confidence. You learn when to lead and when to, you know, like kind of follow, or you learn how to be part of a team. And so if people don't have those opportunities to participate, so, you know, they're missing out on all of that. And where do they learn that? You know, maybe from the family, maybe at school, I don't know. But I think being able to participate with others is really, really vital. So, you know, the child with disability might say, you know, I'm not that different. I mean, you know, this person can't throw a ball, and, you know, I can throw a ball, maybe not as far, but okay, you know, I can do as opposed to I can't do. So it's really, I mean, I see that, you know, in the camp, or I see it, I'll talk a little bit about our school program. So it's called Sports for Everybody. We're currently working with Coachella Valley Unified School District, which is in the eastern part of Coachella Valley. And they've just welcomed us with open arms. And we've worked with, to date, over 2,300 children. And so we go into the school, and during a, you know, 45 minute, 50 minute class period, we'll work with a couple of classes, you know, 50 children. And we have the children push in a sport wheelchair. They'll play sitting volleyball, and they will also play boccia with their non-dominant hand, and we'll blindfold them too. And we rotate them around. And so all the children get an appreciation. And, you know, usually, you know, the able-bodied kids are like, boy, this isn't so easy, you know, or, you know, you explode these myths or contradictions. Three of the staff that worked with me are people with disabilities. One person's spina bifida, two others visual impairment. And, you know, I'll say to the children, hey, so what sports can't these guys do? You know, they're like, they can't do this, can't do this. And I'll say, hey, you know, what sports do you play? And the people who are working with me, you know, one guy, visual impairment, will say, well, I jumped out of airplanes, you know, or I do archery. The person who works with me, Melissa, with spinal bifida, you know, I'll say to the kids, do you think she can drive? You know, and some will say, well, and then Melissa will point to her car and say, well, you know, I drove that cross country to get out here to live in California. So that, you know, the kids, the children, it helps them to kind of expand, you know, their thinking, and then they become more accepting. You know, they're not afraid of someone maybe, you know, with a disability, or they say, yeah, my grandparent uses a wheelchair. So it's a really, you know, I mean, I found it a really powerful program, and I'm hoping, you know, we can do it in other parts of not only Coachella Valley, but throughout Southern California. But we do, you know, so again, that's just part of, you know, the bigger picture of the things that we're trying to do. But ultimately, it's about how do you create greater societal inclusion, you know? And so that's, you know, that's what drives me.
Well, Mike, the question whenever, I mean, I know because, you know, I'm involved with a nonprofit, but maybe some of the folks that are listening or for the folks that are maybe watching the video of this, how do you fund your programs?
Yeah, so, I look at this, it's a business, no matter how you look at it.
Right.
And you have an MBA. So I've always, in all the nonprofits, that I've been a director in, it's not easy, but it is a business. Our revenue stream is different than private sector, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But we've been fortunate in, building our reputation so that we have gotten some fairly good-sized grants to help us run our program. In fact, we're 3+ years old, but every year we've been able to double our revenues, which is pretty, pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
The issue, though, comes in that, there's restricted money and unrestricted money. So when you write a grant, your money is restricted to specific line items. And so that, I think, is always a challenge for every nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to do a fundraising dinner in September. That'll be our first one. We do get some donations. So that's unrestricted money. We can do whatever we like with it. I think one of the things is balancing, right, your revenue stream with the activities that you're involved in. And I'm a person who, I don't say no to things. I really, because I think there's so much work that needs to be done. When we formed, we wrote a business plan, strategic plan, the whole thing. And said, there's some major gaps here in Riverside County and in other places. And so, how do you balance the two? And, it's just a lot of work. And but you have to feel really good about what you're doing. It has to be right here.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not a job. It is a job, but it's not. It's like,
yeah.
I do whatever I need to do. If I work 7 days a week, or 7 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
We're in decent shape. I'm happy with how we've grown. But it's not an easy thing, like any business,
And with, the other issue with grants too, is normally they're 1 year. So you get the grant this year and is it great? Okay. Well, the next year, are you still eligible to go after that same money, or do you have to find that same money somewhere else?
Yeah.
So it's the constant in search of.
It's, you really have to diversify your funding base. You don't want to be dependent on grants.
Right.
Because just as you were talking, right? So the more that you can find donors that want to invest in, the work that you're doing,
mm-hmm.
The more sustainable the organization, will be. Mm-hmm. And that takes time, to develop, because people need to see what you're doing. And it's not just about appreciating, but it's about, they want to have some confidence that, what you're doing makes sense and it's helping whatever societal issue it is that, the nonprofit is working on. So,
mm-hmm.
And it helps, right? You're passionate. I'm really passionate about this work. I found it much later in life and I found it overseas, but,
Yeah.
Nevertheless, it's this thing with me, and I know in whatever form, whether it's volunteer, whether it's paid, I'll probably be doing this for the remainder of my life. And at some point I'll be playing wheelchair basketball because I need to use a wheelchair.
Yeah.
I play now, but
one thing I didn't mention when I was describing myself is I am a wheelchair user.
Yeah.
Spinal cord injury, paraplegic, 47 years post-injury. And it's funny because when you talk about, everybody at some point is going to have a disability. So we used to refer to able-bodied folks as TABs, temporarily able-bodied, because you just never know at some point. So And yeah, we, that was, gosh, you know,
yeah, it's just, and I, you know, it's just a question of age, and it will, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. it's up to everyone. It doesn't matter. I mean, there are those people that have accidents, right? They have a spinal mm-hmm. cord injury, and that's, yep. you know, but I think, you know, an important point is, so it's not the end at all, right? Because there are, you know, there are all of these opportunities. And I think, you know, you have to be willing to take advantage of those opportunities. And I think, but, you know, we need to do more. Recently, I sent out an email, I think you might've been on it, I don't know, to
a
number of municipalities
mm-hmm.
Who have dipped their toe in the water and are starting to think about this, doing some adaptive sport fairs. And in the longer term, you know, it really will take municipalities to offer some level of adaptive sports,
mm-hmm.
Hopefully, you know, equal to the number of, you know, other recreational activities that they offer. That's really going to be, you know, the game changer.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think, but you got to keep talking to people and, you know, ensuring that they understand there's not more liability with using a sport chair than, you know, someone running on the court,
mm-hmm.
same thing. So it, you know, things will flatten out, I think, over time, but it's, you got to be, as you well know, you have to be super persistent about
yeah.
stuff, you know.
Yeah, what caught me or what jumped out at me with that email you sent was you mentioned Menifee.
Yeah.
Menifee is the next, you know, the next city up the road, up the 215 freeway. For me, it's where, in fact, where the kids bought their homes. So, you know, I thought, oh, there we go. Because where I live, they probably wouldn't be the first to jump into something like that. But there's two neighboring cities that probably would, and Menifee actually has. So yeah, I can certainly help.
You should be part of that discussion. But I also have some to reach out to the adjacent municipalities in hopes that, you know, they'll join, because the reality is not everyone is going to invest in sport wheelchairs and other equipment. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if a few different municipalities got together and said, okay, we're going to share some stuff, then it, you know, then it's really, it's a game changer.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, yeah. You know, you start adaptive sports fair, and then what's the next step? What's the next step? You know, the other piece, as you well know, Rick, is getting more colleges and universities.
Yes.
To offer competitive adaptive sports. We're mm-hmm. fortunate, San Diego State, you know, they are established, they're growing, UCLA is trying, you know, trying to get sent down to college, working with Long Beach City College, and hopefully we'll do an adaptive sports fair there in April of next year. But if you could get a number of colleges to start offering adaptive sports, then, you know, all these children who are playing, especially in the San Diego area, I mean, there's a ton of stuff going on. They don't have to go out of state, you know, to play wheelchair basketball.
Right, right.
I think that's, you know, I think that's really, that's another game changer, you know. But it's all, you know, you see these things bubbling up and, you know, we just keep working at it. And, you know, over time, I think things do change and we see, you know, a lot more inclusion. You know, in our next lifetimes, Rick, it will be very different, right?
And I kind of hope so. And we, you know, you have to be patient because none of this happens quickly. It's really changing mindsets and, you know, and finding that champion, you know, in that particular school district or at that particular university, or, you know, it's just finding that person who understands and is willing to, you know, to champion that, you know, knowing that you know, that we would be there, you know, in full support.
Yeah, I think, you know, having the internal champion is vital. It's interesting. I, after the wheelchair basketball camp on Saturday, I took someone out to play pickleball. And I was talking to some people playing tennis on an adjacent court.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I said, yeah, I'm doing adaptive sports. And they said, oh, at the, I think it's the Barnes Tennis Center.
Yes.
They said, oh yeah, they do some wheelchair tennis. So it was great, you know, to hear that,
yes,
that, you know, people become more aware. And so, you know, you have organizations such as USTA, US Tennis Association, which is really pushing wheelchair tennis, you know, for every single coach. That's been fantastic. You know, you have Move United really pushing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, San Diego State is doing a great job down there. And so all of these different groups, you know, in Orange County and LA County, they just, it's, you know, it's a question of, you know, coming together and doing this for the greater good,
mm-hmm,
which, you know, is happening, right? Does it just, mm-hmm, it takes time to not work in silos and to open yourself up and collaborate. There is a quarterly phone call tonight, which Angel City organizes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good. You know, they did something before COVID. They're doing it now. And I think that's very positive, you know, and it's, so how do we work together? You know, it might not be my event, you know, in quotation marks, but how do we all collaborate so that we can develop more opportunities so that people don't have to drive far distances? Because if, right, they have to drive, they're not going to do it.
Yeah.
So there, you know, there's lots of balls up in the air, and it's slowly but surely, I think it's really happening.
And, you know, we're, you say collaborating. I mean, you know, when you get up into Orange County and LA County and you know, Ventura County and North, I mean, and we've got, you know, our friend Andrew Skinner with Triumph Foundation, who's got a great organization who, you know, handles a lot of that, you know, Clayton with Angel City Sports. Yeah, and you know, one thing, as we head to into the, you know, into wrapping this up, but I was thinking just earlier today, and one thing that still kind of bothers me is even when we do our adaptive sports recreation fair, and there's this population of higher level quads in power chairs, and how we need to, whether we figure a way to adapt certain things or we connect, you know, with some of the organization, but we need to offer, I feel, more opportunity for those folks.
Yeah, well, that's why, you know, Boccia is such a really great game. Developed for people with cerebral palsy, but you know, you can use a ramp with an assistant, you can, mm-hmm, use a head pointer, so really, you know, everyone can play that game. I think you know, power soccer,
mm-hmm,
I was watching, I had befriended some people in Japan who played power soccer, and I know some people in the US too. But there was a documentary made about their work. And I was amazed by, you know, the people who were playing. You didn't have a whole lot of movement anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But yet they could still play this game. So I think you're right. You know, and it's at the adaptive sports fairs. I mean, how do we, you know, let's offer this, right? So, mm-hmm, that, again, you know, it's not only inclusive of the able-bodied neurotypical community, it's inclusive of our community,
right,
you know, as well.
Right.
And I think that's super important. You know, I mean, you know, look, there's elite athletes, no matter what your ability, if you use a sport chair or whatever, you know, they're just in a different class.
Mm-hmm.
But for the rest of us, you know, it's a recreational kind of thing. And it's like, mm-hmm, yeah, how do we adapt things so that everyone, you know, can participate, you know, archery, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you're paralyzed on one side, you know, you can hold the bow and then use your teeth to pull that, you know, the string and all that.
Yeah.
It's very possible. We just, I think we have to make more of an effort to do that.
And I think we're finally, I think we're at that point where we have a lot of these other things in place, or they're getting more situated and deeper roots, and that now is a good time to begin to, you know, reach out to that particular demographic across the country.
Yeah.
Find out what people like, what they're doing, how they do it. I know there's this large population of really high level quads who are gamers, you know, online gamers, and they've got all of this equipment to set up so they can competitively. I mean, they're going up against, you know, and you don't know who you're going up against, you know, but they're competitive in their gaming, and great, you know, that's great, but let's, how about you come out of your house and come out to this great place on Mission Bay and enjoy, you know, time with all of these other folks in this great, you know, social, you know, with all the social interaction going on, and try something else.
Yeah, because it's not only about, you know, the physical health, it's social and emotional too. Today, interesting today, after the camp, so this big truck came out and it had all these video games in it. And so all the children after the camp, they went into this thing with, you know, multiple flat screens, and they were playing whatever the heck they play. But maybe that's something we could talk more about getting or doing at our next sports fair. But I, you know, the sports fair is great, and it, you know, continue, and then it's offering these consistent adaptive sports, which is the real key, which I know San Diego Parks and Recs is doing a lot. I mean, I guess Azra's doing a bit. I mean, JT is trying to do more. So I think that's the real key. That's going to change things a lot.
And all those folks that you mentioned are all partners.
Yeah.
MCAT. It's you know, what we couldn't do, or maybe you couldn't do as a single, you know, nonprofit organization, just because of the resources that it would take, as a group, we have the resources and we can do this. Well, Mike, you know, we certainly have a lot of good work ahead of us, same thing. When you have an office at home, you have a tendency to be in that office 7 days a week, but you know what, it is a job, but like you said, it's not a job. You know, it feels just good every time you take that next step. So, if you need to reach out to me, it's rick@spinal-network.org. And Mike, your email?
Yeah, you can go to our website, socaladaptivesports.org. Or mike@socaladaptivesports.org.
And go to either, and I will also, this podcast goes out on many different platforms, and in the description, I will be sure to have both of our contact information will be listed there. So if you have any questions at all, don't hesitate to reach out. And Mike, thanks so much. I really appreciate your being on here, and you know, it, it's um, it was fun. The time flew by, and actually, if you could just hang in there for a second after we bid everyone farewell. So, and with that, I bid everyone farewell. Thank you so much for joining us, and share with your friends if you think that they may enjoy this podcast or any of the others. So thank you.